The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Last year, COVID-19 kept us apart. This year, we're finally together again. Tonight, the night we meet as Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, but most importantly, as Americans, with the duty to one another, to America, to the American people, to the Constitution, and an unwavering resolve that freedom will always triumph over tyranny.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was your Commander-in-Chief, President Joe Biden, speaking last night during the State of the Union address. I don't know if you had a chance to watch it. I did. I got plugged into it and sat there for the, I think it was 1 hour and 10 minutes, something along those lines, as the president started off, of course, dealing with Russia and Ukraine. But there were a lot of other talking points there that surprised me, too, like refund the police and secure the border, a whole litany of other things. We'll talk about it. We'll take a look at the speech a little bit later. The president, as you know, has historic lows in terms of his polls right now. We are a divided country. Midterms are going to be here before we know it. And I think we are seeing language change. We're seeing position change as we are still significant away from the midterms, significant amount of months. I mean, that's an eternity when it comes to elections. What he had to say last night it was striking on a number of different levels. Besides his opening comments on Russia and Ukraine, most analysts, even Democrats, found it to be forgettable. There were some great lines in there. I mean, I had said to my wife, she was watching it with me, you know, there was a few really strong lines. I liked it. But overall, I didn't come away saying, wow, yeah, it was really memorable. David Axelrod, who's a former advisor to President Obama, and I saw a tweet he sent out. He said, hard to avoid making a State of the Union speech sound like a laundry list, but the tide did not turn tonight, he says. What's key in the last sentence is he actually capitalized the word tide. I guess you'd have to see the thing, as in Tide detergent, but a little play on words. CNN's instant poll afterwards, though, showed 41% had very positive reaction, which is down about 10% from his address to the joint session of Congress last year. And CNN said that the lowest very positive rating they've seen for a speech, it's the lowest in 15 years since they've been doing it. I maybe we could talk about this. Maybe in a few minutes, open the phones. I mean, what's your take? How do you read the president? Are you disappointed? Did you vote for him? Did you not vote for him? Do you think that his leadership has been good? What about the future of the country? What about the environment? What about drilling? What about international affairs? What about Afghanistan and now Ukraine? So much to take a look at. Apparently, most Americans are disenchanted. The poll leans Democratic, and as CNN was reporting, it's the lowest they've seen since they've been doing those polls. So we'll talk more about it, though, coming up in a little bit. I don't want to get side-railed. A lot to get you up to speed on. Russia is now pressing its offensive against the Ukraine. Today is a day of prayer and fasting, right? It's Ash Wednesday. So as I think and as I watch and as I read a lot of what's coming in from over in Eastern Europe, I'm trying to intensify my own prayer today and my own fasting. I want to invite you to do the same thing. The Holy Father has asked that we offer prayer and fasting for the situation in Ukraine. It will diffuse it. It will disengage it. It'll work miracles. I am convinced of that. I really am convinced of that. So I hope you won't take it lightly. Right before walking into the show, and I'm not here to scare anyone, but I'll just share this headline. We'll talk about it. The headline here that came into my news alert, it said the Russian foreign minister warns that World War III will be nuclear. That's what he said. He says the third world war would be nuclear and destructive. He went on to say President Biden is an experienced man and has previously stated the only alternative to war are sanctions. But Lavrov, he also came out and he said that Russia would be in real danger if Ukraine ever acquired nuclear weapons. No evidence that they're going to be doing that. They gave them away in the 1990s. But to hear this talk, the saber rattling of nuclear weaponry, I think it calls us to even greater prayer. We've got to do that in earnest. Hope I don't sound like a broken record, but I believe it. I think we have to pray more. I think we have to fast more. I think we have to sacrifice more. A little bit later tonight, well, in an hour, I'll pray the chaplet, and we'll pray fulfilling the Holy Father's requests and our bishop's requests and this need to pray, to fast, to hopefully bring peace to the world, because prayer will do that. The Holy Father, Father Rocky, will be praying the rosary tonight at 7 p.m. He's dedicating his rosary for peace in Ukraine, too. So I hope you'll join him a little bit later for that tension. But again, I don't want fear to dominate. We cannot be fearful. We have to put our trust in God, and we have to pray. That's kind of the bottom line. But more cities are coming under bombardment. Russia says they have taken over a city in the southern portion of the country, and the United Nations General Assembly today took a vote on a resolution condemning Russia. The vote was fascinating to me, right? Who could agree that a sovereign nation should roll over another territory and destroy and take the lives of innocents, right? Out of the 193 member countries, 141 voted to approve this resolution by the UN General Assembly. Five opposed it, including China. 35 others abstained. North Korea was another one, you know, that opposed it. You take a look at some of these radical rogue nations. The other dozen didn't vote. In another international boost, to the Ukraine, the European Parliament voted yesterday to adopt a resolution recommending giving the Ukraine status as an EU candidate. Listen to this. This is there was some infighting set aside. You know, they set that aside for the time being. And I don't know if you saw the standing ovation that Zelensky got yesterday. Well, the EU voted today to unite behind the cause of the Ukraine. Check this out.
If Vladimir Putin thinks he's going to push NATO back by what he's doing, he's gravely mistaken.
For experts on the makeup of the European Union, this was to be expected, a knee-jerk reaction in the face of an existential crisis.
That's the EU. They're always fighting each other over something. But whenever they're attacked from the outside, they come together and then push to fight for their survival.
But the momentum of now, propelled by protest after protest in support of Ukraine, may grind into the slow machinery of the EU. Today's vote to work towards bringing Ukraine into the Union's fold could take years to become a reality.
All right, there you have it. So Albania, I think North Macedonia, Montenegro, Serbia, and Turkey, they'll also be considered as members. But Turkey's application's been a long time coming because the current Islamification that's now taking place there. There are five others of the five members of the EU also called on the group to expedite Ukraine's application after Zelensky's speech yesterday. And we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. On another note, Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood's going to be stopping by. I want to tap into his expertise and insights as to what's now happening. Russia, as you heard, stepped up its campaign against Ukraine, mostly targeting now civilian areas with bombs and rockets and missiles, and this is causing a huge exodus out of the country. I'd heard about 800,000 people right now are trying. The number of people fleeing the country has grown to more than 800,000, but some of these exits now are being blocked. That's what I'm hearing. The UN's estimated the numbers could increase to more than 1 million people leaving the country just within hours. The big number, they estimated when this began, maybe 1.5 million people. Huge, huge exodus. Huge refugee crisis. Sanctions against Russia, they're increasing the pressure on Vladimir Putin to change his mind. The U.S. has also decided to close its airspace to Russian aviation, which means the entirety of North America is off limits, as are many, if not more, if not most of the European countries. And I want to get Dakota Wood's take on that to see what that could lead to. The president led his State of the Union last night with talks about Ukraine and Russia. Stick around because, you know, we're going to take a dive into a lot of the points that he made last night a little bit later, and we'll talk more about Ukraine. But right now, here's what CBS was reporting last night about those fleeing the Ukraine.
As the Russian bombardment intensifies, the number of civilians fleeing Ukraine to neighboring countries has reached nearly 700,000. The crowd's getting so large that the wait time at some checkpoints is now around 5 days.
More than 400,000 Ukrainians have already made the long, cold journey to Poland, and more are on the way.
I don't want to leave, but it's completely dangerous to stay here.
The EU says 4 million people could be forced to flee. At this receiving center in Chemush, volunteers from all over Europe have come to offer free rides, work, and places to stay.
We have to do something.
Friedrich Huttner drove from Germany and says Europeans have been much more divided about taking in refugees from other non-European conflicts.
So that refugee crisis is continuing. Russia's trying to put the squeeze on Ukraine. Right now they've got a 40-mile convoy slowly making its way to Kyiv, despite claims in the Western media that it's at a standstill. So we'll find out what the story there is. I want to welcome to the show and, of course, to the conversation Dakota Wood. He served 20 years in the Marine Corps. He's retired as a lieutenant colonel. He's done a lot of media. I've seen him on major networks around the country. Of course, you can learn more about him at the Heritage Foundation. He's also the author of their annual report, The Index of Military Strength. And if you're curious, it's well worth checking out. Dakota, great to have you back. Thank you for your time.
A great blessing always to be with you and look forward to our chat.
So, from Lieutenant Colonel, you've served for a long time. What's your take on what Russia is now doing? They've got this 40-mile convoy. They're making their way. They're squeezing Ukraine. They're bombing civilian areas. Ukrainians are saying that they've taken over Russian abandoned military equipment, which is supposed to be actually quite a bit. How much truth? What are we hearing? What do we know? How much of the media we're getting is accurate? Can you sort this out? I understand we have Russian, soldiers that they're willing to return to Russia if their mothers come and collect them. Give me your latest assessment of what's now unfolding in Ukraine.
Yeah, the highly technical term is it's a mess.
Yeah,
that's the best describe it. Yeah, first reports are always wrong. So when we hear that something really horrific or really miraculous happened, usually the truth is somewhere in between. So all of these examples that you cited, they can all be true and not be a contradiction with each other, right? So it is true that there were 200,000 forces or troops arrayed around Ukraine. They were sent into the country on four lines of attack. All that is true. Russia has overwhelming numbers in personnel and equipment and munitions. So just in a numbers game, they should be easily able to defeat the Ukrainian forces. But now you have kind of the moral or the morale part of this. Why is Russia attacking in the mind of the average Russian soldier? And so now we hear some of these stories. This young kid, 20 years old, he's a conscript, was told you're going to go on exercises in Belarus or someplace, and now he is lobbing mortar rounds or firing this machine gun at Ukrainians, which historically and ethnically and all are kind of cousins, and there's a lot of flow between the two countries and all that sort of stuff. And so he's wondering, why are we doing this? I just don't understand. Well, on the Ukrainian side, this is an absolute war of survival. So even when the numbers are stacked against you, your will to, be innovative and to, absorb hits in terms of, these bombings of the cities and whatnot and continue to keep on fighting, that can be a winner, right there, right? So you're putting up all this resistance. There are credible reports. I've got colleagues in Europe associated with the U.S. European Command who are saying that, yes, Russian equipment is being abandoned. Some of it is being intentionally sabotaged by the operators because they don't want to continue in the fight, and they're going to literally walk back to Russia.
Wow.
It's being captured by Ukrainians. But what percentage is that of the larger Russian force, right? So it's all kind of relative in the immediate context of a particular battle zone. It is absolutely true that the Russians are bombarding major cities with what we call area weapons, larger munitions that detonate in the air. They drop smaller bomblets, they're called cluster bombs, and create devastation. Rockets are going into civilian apartment buildings and government buildings and town squares that aren't military targets at all, right? And so it's a horrific kind of a reenactment of what Vladimir Putin oversaw in Chechnya many years ago, where they leveled the capital city of Grozny in a very, very brutal fashion. And we could be seeing the same kind of tactic being applied to Kyiv and Kharkiv and some of these other major cities that are largely on the periphery. So all that is true It is not a foregone conclusion that Russia wins this. They are operating on what we call extended lines of supply. You know, the further they get away from Mother Russia, the longer that logistics tether is for fuel and ammunition, medical supplies, repair parts, and all that stuff. Whereas the Ukrainians are fighting on home territory, and all their stuff is right there. So what they need is a sustained lifeline, you know, more munitions and those sorts of things brought in from European countries to keep their war effort going. So it's the nature of war that it's not a foregone conclusion, and this battle will ebb and flow. But it is clear that Vladimir Putin has pulled the trigger literally and figuratively, and he's all in. So his reputation, probably his personal life, is really on the marker here, and he is going to do everything he can to win. Does that lead to nuclear weapons? You know, he views them as usable tools. Everybody else says that that'll never happen. But we were saying that, you know, a full-scale invasion of Ukraine wouldn't happen to begin with, you know. Yeah. So it's just a mess, and we'll have to see how it plays out over the next few days.
Well, Colonel, to that point, you know, it has given me great pause. Yesterday we spoke to a psychiatrist just in an effort to try to evaluate whether or not he's become more paranoid, whether COVID had some sort of impact, whether it's age, you know, are there other factors that could drive what seems to be a change in behavior? When you have Condoleezza Rice, when you've got the president of France, Emmanuel Macron, when you've got senators that have access to intelligence information, all saying that, hey, we do have some concerns. There's really been a change in personality behavior, and he seems to be acting erratic. I don't scare anyone, but I got a text alert before coming on the show, and the headline was Russian Foreign Minister Warns World War III Will Be Nuclear. I don't know whether this is saber rattling or whether or not they are willing to say, hey, if I'm going to lose my personal wealth and I'm going to lose my country, we're going to be ostracized, then we're going to end it this way. I don't want to scare people. I personally don't think any sane human being would ever use these weapons. But then again, to your point, you know, look what he's doing. He's rolling over a sovereign nation, and the world is against him. So I'd love your take on that. How big of a threat do you think that could possibly be, the use that he would use the ultimate weapon? Because he's using these vacuum bombs and cluster bombs and committing acts of war already.
Yeah, exactly. You know, these vacuum bombs, I mean, it uses materials that aerosolize, a very flammable material mixed with really, really tiny bits of metal, and then there's a detonating charge. And so just like gasoline, the vapors, you know, are so highly explosive, this is the nature of this weapon. And so it consumes all the air in the area, a massive shockwave. I mean, it's the most powerful explosion that you can do in conventional sense without going to that nuclear threshold. So he's using those kinds of weapons in Kharkiv and probably will use them in Kyiv, right, the capital city.
Right.
So the whole point about nuclear weapons is they're supposed to be deterrent, the ultimate deterrent. But the only reason that they have a deterrent effect is that somebody believes that they might actually be used, and that if used, the devastation they would cause is so horrific, nobody wants to see them used, and therefore they aren't used. You know, it's not quite circular logic, but it's based on the belief that these are usable tools. We have seen them used in war, you know, a long time ago in the 40s, but they're there, and people maintain them, and they train with them. So if Putin feels that everything is on the line with this invasion of Ukraine, and there's a danger of him not winning, then in this dramatic escalation, he could use one device against a city like Kharkiv, and I'm just speculating here, you know, because it's further away from the rest of Europe. He makes his point. Okay, so now what does Europe and NATO and the United States do? Do we respond with a nuclear weapon? And if nobody can conceive of that, then Putin could show the utility of using a weapon to make a point, right?
Right.
To force Ukraine into submission, and everybody else kind of stands back, you know, thinking, what do we do now? So the response could be you just completely economically, physically, culturally isolate Russia in totality. That could be the response. But if that is so painful, does that spur them to use more nuclear weapons?
Mm-hmm.
If you go in conventionally, isn't that kind of upping the ante anyway? You know, you've got U.S. and German forces at war with Russian forces. So this is this really scary time. And no, we don't want to scare people, But what it does say is when countries allow themselves to become weak and exploitable, then a bully or a tyrant, somebody like Vladimir Putin, mm-hmm. will take advantage of that.
I know.
And then we have situations like we have today. So there aren't any good options, but I think the best option is to show resolution to the level that the Ukrainians are showing. You know, they're very resolute in defending their homeland, making it as troublesome and painful as possible, because the alternative would be death and destruction is not good. We want to bring this to an end. So why doesn't Ukraine just submit, right? Yep. And be subjugated by Russia, become a vassal state? Well, we wouldn't say that that's a good outcome either. Right. Yeah. So I think it's a moment where we have to really do a lot of introspection here in the United States. What is the status of our military? How are we poised economically? Are we unified as a country or riven with, you know, the divisions of identity politics and these sorts of things, mm-hmm. making us vulnerable to others? How critically dependent are we on other sources? You know, 7% of our energy comes from Russia. And yet we're stopping the production of domestically produced oil. So we become more vulnerable to the exploitive sorts of behaviors of somebody like Vladimir Putin. So I know that we're kind of getting off track. I'm getting off track from the simple question about what's going on.
There's a lot
to
talk about.
But it does serve as a microcosm of everything.
It does. No, it does. I mean, our own energy security, we're buying, what, 600,000 or how many barrels of oil from Russia
barrels,
still?
Right.
I mean, it's wild. And to your point with the nuclear weapons, I mean, gosh, Ukraine gave them up in 1994. They're probably ruining the day they did that. And the fact that Vladimir Putin's threatening to use them would make me, as a nation, whether I'm Moldova or Ukraine or any other nation, I'd want to have one just as a deterrent against the threat of somebody using them against me like Russia or someone else. And now we get this proliferation of nuclear weapons on the planet, which makes us not safer. I think it makes us far less safe.
Yeah, and real quick on that, I mean, that's why North Korea has them, right?
Yep.
And that's why if Iran gets them, I mean, you're not going to negotiate away a potential nuclear capability that Iran is trying to achieve. If it wants to dominate the Middle East, if Shia Islam wants to dominate Sunni Islam, and if they're truly intent on destroying the state of Israel, why would Iran, now getting so close, negotiate away the ultimate advantage, right?
Yeah.
And so, again, it's another message of allowing these things to get to a point where they're almost unrecoverable. And so, you know, nuclear weapons have a utility to them. And we just haven't had to really seriously consider it because somebody wasn't crazy enough to actually draw that sword. Yeah. And there is the potential that Putin actually does that.
My guest today is Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood. If you want to join us, I only have a few moments with him. Let me go to Philadelphia here. Charlie's got a question for you regarding the outrage we've seen, not just against Ukraine, but why the disconnect with other nations. Charlie, good afternoon. You're on the air.
How you doing? I just can't seem to fathom this big thing about Russia and the Ukraine. And we've let China, like, destroy all the monasteries in Tibet, and they have the Uyghurs in camps, and they go into Hong Kong, and they get a free ride. You know, it seems to me like somebody wants Putin out of there, and they've been pushing his buttons the whole way, and it's going to blow up. You know what I mean?
Charlie, thanks. Let me let Dakota, Colonel Wood respond to you.
Yeah, all politics are local, and the dollar or the renminbi or the euro rules. I mean, money rules, right? So China represents such a massive market, and they have so subsidized their own production with very low labor rates, no environmental regulation compliance or anything like that. So if you want to buy a cheap thing and you want to go to Walmart or Target or wherever it might be ordered from Amazon, the best place to get it dollar-wise is made in China, right? And it rankles us, but that's where people spend their money. So China has made gazillions of dollars over the last 20 years, and people have become economically dependent on cheap sources of supply. So if you want to disrupt that in some way and penalize China, you're going to see the cost of living in your own country or community go up. And so in politics, politicians never want to say, hey, a regulation or policy is going to make your life more expensive. You know, nobody wants to say that because they wouldn't vote for that person to begin with. So we do this to ourselves. You know, if you want independence and freedom, choice, then you have to shoulder the burden of what that means in not becoming dependent on cheap energy from Russia or cheap goods, you know, manufactured at slave wages from China. And so what happens with the Uyghurs in internment camps, with social credit scores and, you know, the autocratic form of government in China and all these other places, people ignore that willingly. You know, the NBA is going to do what China wants because they want merchandise sold in China. Hollywood wants to sell films to a billion people in China, and so they're going to change things in scripts and images because everybody's chasing profit margins.
It is. It's all about money.
It is. And it's sad that it shows what people value on a day-to-day basis until it becomes so blatant. And that's what Ukraine represents, that you cannot ignore Russia rolling tanks into Ukraine. You just can't ignore that. And so now people are responding. I'm glad to see it, but it should never have gotten to that point to begin with.
I only have about a moment left, and I am I want to give voice to other people who have called in as well. Many people are saying, hey, look, I see Vladimir Putin's position. He's concerned about NATO aggression. He's concerned about having Ukraine become part of NATO, et cetera. That's why he's going in and doing this. And they see him almost as being justified. Some have made the comparison to Cuba. Imagine if, you know, if Russia suddenly started putting, you know, weapons in, you know, 90 miles off our coast. How do you see that? I don't see that as justifiable, but your thoughts? Because now NATO is on his doorstep.
You know, it is. And there were these kind of assurances made in these various agreements and all that, that, you know, NATO wouldn't expand after the collapse of the Soviet Union. They did it anyway. There were assurances made to Ukraine that, hey, if you give up your nuclear weapons, don't worry about it. We're going to make sure that, you know, your interest in security is made. So everybody makes these assurances when the times are good and the living is easy. You know, in the 90s, there were no peer competitors. You know, there was no strengthened Russia and all that stuff. So people, it's easy to make these kinds of assurances, you know, even if they're not written down. Mm-hmm. But again, this is a case where even if Putin felt that he was justified because of this eastward expansion of NATO, is that justification for carpet bombing cities, right, and destroying the infrastructure and the culture and the people of this neighboring state? And I think that there were other ways to go about doing that. He could ratchet up the price of energy. There were other things to do rather than pulling a trigger and invading the country. So I think where behavior should be viewed on either side, invading the country is an absolute wrong, and the world needs to do something about that.
Amen. I want to thank you again for your time. Always enjoyable. I could sit here for an hour and just pick your brain and tap into your expertise. My thanks to Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood. Check him out at the Heritage Foundation. That's heritage.org. We'll catch up again soon, okay, Dakota?
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Russian stock market has lost 40% of its value, and trading remains suspended. The Russian economy is reeling, and Putin alone is the one to blame. Together with our allies, we're providing support to the Ukrainians in their fight for freedom. Military assistance, economic assistance, humanitarian assistance. We're giving more than $1 billion of direct assistance to Ukraine, and we'll continue to aid Ukrainian people as they defend their country and help ease their suffering.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was part of the president's State of the Union address last night. He led, of course, with talks about Ukraine and Russia. You know, they work on these speeches for weeks leading up to this, and I'm sure with all that has developed literally in the past few days, that speech had to be rewritten. But, you know, after the Ukraine-Russia part of the address, it went back to what sounded somewhat like a laundry list, although there were some surprising things in there, and I do want to talk about it with you today. Dr. Paul Kengor is going to be stopping by. We'll get him into the conversation. Love to hear from you, too. CNN, who did an instant poll, they found the lowest level of approval for a speech, State of the Union, like that, in the 15 years they've been doing this poll. There were a couple great lines in it, as in all these speeches. you know. But fundamentally, it was a laundry list, and there were some surprises like refund the police. We need to fund the police, about stronger borders, things that are really antithetical to many on the left. Those were policies that, you know, were the complete opposite of everything that they had just espoused just months earlier, weeks earlier. But the Russian invasion of Ukraine, of course, was the top of the agenda. And the president is saying that we're going to do everything we can to help President Zelensky and the Ukrainian people. We're united. Of course, we're not going to go directly to war. He made that very clear. No boots on the ground. That's out of our control. But they're going to do everything they can financially and with sanctions to squeeze Russia. But the rest of that speech, analysts are saying, you know, not that great. And again, I don't know whether you saw it or not. We'll play parts of it for you. The major abortion bill, you know, that was up for vote, that failed. It's the Women's Health Protection Act. You know, and thank God that failed. It was close, but it failed. The Build Back Better Act couldn't get out of the Senate either. There was one bipartisan spending bill on infrastructure. That wasn't a big deal, but the president really can't point and say that he had any major accomplishments. I think that's part of the problem. He didn't say much about inflation or crime or COVID-19 in his speech. He did address some of that, but no mention of Afghanistan, of course, right? And I saw Representative Chris Smith. He pointed out that there was no mention at all of our longtime ally, Israel. Joining me today to help break it down, take your calls, questions, share some insights, Dr. Paul Kenger. He's a professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania, our home state, and the author of a lot of books. You might want to check out his latest. It's called The Devil and Karl Marx, one of a number of great books authored by Dr. Kenger. Doctor, good afternoon. Welcome back.
Yeah. Hey, Drew, how you doing?
Always good to talk with you. I don't know whether you sat through the speech last night. I did. I watched it all. I knew I'd be addressing it. I am curious as to what the president was going to talk about in light of the, you know, 1 year in office and all that's unfolding internationally. What was your takeaway? And give me some of your insights, if you could.
Well, I went out with my wife, which I thought was a much better use of my time. but I did unfortunately watch some of it, about as much as I could take. And in fairness to Biden, I should point out that I really loathe State of the Union speeches, Drew. Yeah. I don't like them, no matter who's giving them, because they always follow this kind of format of this long laundry list of different things that government's going to do to make your life just perfect. And you know, they got these applause lines, you know, certain ones for certain things, and they go on and on and on and on. And this was like that. And as much as there weren't some things in there that, that maybe people on the left could have jumped up and down about, there were things for the left that the left was thrilled about, including Biden's statement about transgender kids, right? Very young kids, you know, allowing them to achieve their God-given potential, And to our Catholic president, the God-given potential of these little boys and girls is to choose another gender other than the one that God gave them. So that would be their God-given potential. So lines like that just make me leave the room, and I can't take it anymore. I'd rather go into a padded room in a straitjacket and bang my head off padded walls, right? It's just too much. And this kind of victorious tone about Ukraine.
Before we go to Ukraine, I think what you just said is really important. I want to play that for those who haven't heard, because this is really, I think, indicative of the Biden administration and one of the great problems we have in our country today. Listen, this is Biden's thoughts on some of those social issues.
Advancing liberty and justice also requires protecting the rights of women. The constitutional right affirmed by Roe v. Wade, standing precedent for half a century, is under attack as never before. If you want to go forward, not backwards, we must protect access to health care, preserve a woman's right to choose, and continue to advance maternal health care for all Americans. For our LGBTQ plus Americans, let's finally get the Bipartisan Equality Act to my desk. The onslaught of state laws targeting transgender Americans and their families, it's simply wrong. I said last year, especially to our younger transgender Americans, I'll always have your back as your president so you can be yourself and reach your God-given potential.
I'm sorry, he tries to be so progressive, so liberal, so current, right? That man should be excommunicated for what he just said about Roe v. Wade, about protecting a woman's right to choose. He is obstinate in his language and in what I'm going to call scandalous behavior. I think it was sickening to hear him say that, and of course he followed it up with the whole LGBTQ plus stuff. This is who he is, and this is part of the problem. This is part of the sickness that we have in our country today, and I think this is one of the greatest weaknesses of our country. But your thoughts on him and his party's constant promotion of this? I don't know whether they think it wins them votes. I think they lose votes over this issue.
It's horrific, and so I had to awaken today to emails from my Protestant colleagues, as I knew I would, right, saying, where is your church? Why are they stopping this, right? What is this? The onslaught of state laws targeting transgender children? States don't have the right to come in and tell a parent of an eight-year-old that the parent has some say in whether or not their little boy or girl choose to take, transitioning drugs or a 14-year-old girl, whether or not she can have her breasts cut off. Or a young boy, whether he can have his testicles removed. States have no right to say that because our Catholic president has the back of transgender children, right? And the statement about abortion and Roe v. Wade. Drew, I did your show months ago, and I begged Catholics listening to us, and I'll do it again, the ones who voted for Biden, right, who are pro-life but voted for Biden anyway, would you please try to do something about this? Please call the White House. Send a letter. Tell them, I didn't like Donald Trump. I didn't like his mean tweets. So that's why I voted for Joe Biden. But please, about our Catholic president, please stop doing these things to advance abortion. But they're obviously not doing it, and he's continuing on with this crusade for Roe v. Wade.
I can't take it.
It's ghastly. It's embarrassing. It's a scandal.
It is. I've called it. It's scandalous. Mike in Chicago. Good afternoon. You're on the air with Dr. Kangor.
Hey, Drew. Hey, Dr. Kangor. Drew, great show as usual.
Thanks.
It's funny. I saw something today in passing when Biden was going out to his helicopter. A reporter asked him from the pool, how can you be a Catholic president and support abortion? And he started to answer when his wife walked up and pulled him away. It was a telling moment. Gosh. I'm sure somebody can get the clip for you.
We
have
amazing. It right now.
She literally pulled him away. But here's the other thing I wanted to say really quickly too, Drew. Right before that happened, he said that the cardinal came and gave him ashes at the White House. Not sure if that's true, but that was Biden's claim. My thing here is, to Dr. Kangor's point, why on all of God's green earth, why would a cardinal go and administer ashes to this man when he is evil, Drew?
Well, here's the thing, Mike. I got to hold you right there because I got to take a quick break. When we come back, let's address this. One, I hope the cardinal was on a pastoral mission to give him the roses and remind him from dust you came and dust you shall return, right? To remind him of the message of Lent, of repentance. We need to pray for Joe Biden to amend his way. We need to pray for our cardinals and our bishops, too. I have a real problem with Joe Biden professing to be Catholic and the things that he's saying publicly to the world, to our nation, and to the policies advancing. Maybe this Lent, he should be the focus of our prayers. When we come back, I'll play that audio, Mike, and we'll talk more.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
All the news and issues
now
that are happening now.
One place.
The Drew Mariotti Show
on Relevant Radio.
Now.
Great to be with you. Thank you for joining me. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we will pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. So tell one other person, be sure and join me. For that, let's pray for our president. Let's pray for many of these world leaders in the conflict that's taking place around the world. I don't know if you caught it last night. President Biden delivered his first State of the Union address amid what is really very troubled times, so a time of crisis for Europe and, of course, especially for Ukraine. We've got rising inflation, border crises, a whole inflation at historic levels right now, or some that we have not seen in 40 years. The president said a lot of things in his speech. Many said, hey, it was like a laundry list. He talked about refunding the police and stronger borders, and he spoke about life, a woman's right to choose, and how that has to be protected. My producer Maggie was able to grab that audio that Mike was talking about, and if you were tuned in just a few moments ago, here's what he was referring to. Listen.
People of Ukraine.
And last night, you said you support Roe v. Wade as a Catholic. Why did you support abortion as a Catholic? Well, church teaching.
I tell you what, I don't want to get in a debate with you on theology, but you know. Well, anyway, I'm not going to make a judgment for other people.
Oh my gosh, doctor. Let's talk about it. I don't want to go off because I'm about to. When I hear that type of a statement from the president, it just drives me crazy.
Yeah. He doesn't want to talk about theology, but there he was in the State of the Union. Less than 12 hours earlier, invoking God's name for God-given transgender rights, right? For the right of a six-year-old to switch his God-given gender, to live up to his God-given potential, to choose his gender without any state anywhere in the country giving parents the rights to object. So, you know, talk about God one moment, but then you can't the next moment. Mm-hmm. And in regard to Mike's point on the cardinal, I would assume that's probably Cardinal Gregory. And, you know, let's be honest. I'm on a Catholic station here. I don't want to lie. We all know that Cardinal Gregory is liberal, and he's going to let Biden get away with this. Now, in defense of Cardinal Gregory, he's been very good on in his statements on abortion, pro-life, and other things. I commend him on that. But there is no way. No way, no way, no way, no way he's going to deny Joe Biden communion over abortion, no matter what Biden does, no matter what Biden says on LGBTQ issues or anything else. He is a liberal cardinal appointed by Pope Francis with the guidance of Cardinal Supich, and that's why he's going to give Biden a pass on this.
Yeah, and again, you know, when it comes down to it, is between Biden and the cardinal. It's between the two of them that we need to pray for the conversion of President Biden, the good that he could do in that position, for sure. We need to pray for our bishops and our cardinals, especially. And again, you know, we've had these conversations many times on the air, you know, about, you know, Canon 915 and 916 and excommunication and where the church stands and the spreading of scandal. And, you know, I don't know what happens behind closed doors. I always want to give the church the benefit of the doubt. I'm hoping they're maybe counseling him, trying to, in some respects, make him aware of his, you know, erroneous ways. But the optics of it really are quite bad.
Speaking of the optics, Drew, yeah. Standing behind him, loving every moment of that, was Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, I know.
And same thing there. And she has a good cardinal, Salvatore Corleone, right? Who's stood very strong on these issues. But if she needs to get the Eucharist, mm-hmm. she'll just go somewhere other than one of his churches.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And so the scandal continues, and my Protestant friends, you know, this is why they don't become Catholic, as one of my students told me. One of my students said, this is why my entire family left the Catholic Church, and why we're glad, and we have no reason to go back. It's a church filled with hypocrisy, of clergymen and leaders that don't stand for their principles, and
see,
good riddance. That's what he told me.
But you know, that's frustrating to me as well, because it couldn't be farther from the truth. You know, even at the height of the scandal, you know, we know that only the number was about 4% of priests had betrayed the vows of their ordination. You know, were involved. 96% or even higher were good, holy men, and yet they get besmirched with you know the sins of a few. And I think the same thing happens. I mean, people look at guys like Biden or Pelosi or some of these other so-called, there were 13, senators that voted in favor of the Women's Health Protection Act. I couldn't believe it. I mean, how can a Catholic do something like that?
Yeah, those Democratic senators, including my state, Bob Casey Jr.,
Yeah, Catholic.
His father was governor, and he was the KC of KCV Planned Parenthood. He was a great pro-life Democrat, and his son, who claims to be pro-life, has been horrible on these issues. And this is why, for people listening, liberal Catholics, to say, why do you guys make a big deal about the politicians and the people in charge? Because they are the highest profile cases, right, with the most influence. They're the ones who make these laws and make these changes. And they're the ones that cause these scandals in the church. If you can't draw a line, at least with these handful, mm-hmm, or dozen or, mm-hmm, few, then this is exactly what you're going to get.
You're right. The problem that why I get frustrated is they breed scandal. I mean, people who don't know the faith or don't know what it, right, is like to be Catholic, they think the church is filled with pedophiles, or they think, oh my gosh, look at how Catholics vote. Why are they any different than anything else? They're advancing, you know, abortion, they're advancing contraception, or pro-LGBTQ+, et cetera. It's scandalous, and we need to hold these people accountable. That's charitable. It's fraternal correction. Jim in Minnesota, good afternoon. You're on the air with Dr. Paul Kengor.
Yeah, he kind of spoke to me a little bit. The devout Saint Nancy Pelosi sat behind Biden there last night, and she provides all the money, millions of dollars, for abortion, and I bet you she's got ashes on her forehead this morning. I, mm-hmm, called her bishop here 2 days ago, yep, and I said, it's time for excommunication. Stand up for something.
Yeah. Hey, I would applaud Archbishop Corleone of San Francisco. He has, I know, addressed her on this issue. We've asked him about that. He's had prayer campaigns and fasting. He's done a lot to try to bring about a change with Nancy Pelosi. But, Doctor, that's just another.
He's been great, Drew. I think I promoted him to cardinal accidentally a few minutes ago. But if only he was, right? And unfortunately, it's people like him and Chaput and others who were not elevated to cardinal in this current pontificate. And people like Supich and Gregory, who have been, who, as much as they do defend and make clear the church's position on abortion and everything else, they're not contradicting that, but they're also not about in a million years ever to enforce this when it comes to people like Biden and Pelosi. Right.
There's a call coming in from Orlando Park, Illinois. Don's online. I don't really know the answer to this question. I got a question about a prayer for Russia, doctor. I know you're a Russian expert. Don, good afternoon.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Don. Go right ahead.
Okay, great. You know, I used to buy this little blue prayer book a long time ago, mm-hmm, and it was very interesting, and it's a great prayer book to help with the prayer. And one of the prayers in it in the beginning was a prayer before the rosary. It said, I don't know if you're familiar, Queen of the Holy Rosary, you've deigned to come to Fatima to reveal to the three separate children. You go on and on. Mm-hmm. And in it, it says, may be enriched with his fruits, obtain peace for the world, the conversions of sinners and of Russia, and the favors I ask you in this rosary. Then you insert your petition. It's ironic. This prayer book I've got, and I think I bought it like 10 years ago, and I had bought like a bunch of them because you'd lose them or give them away,
Don,
or whatever.
Don, I don't mean to interrupt you, but what's the question? Because we only have a minute left at the very most. Is there a question?
Well, no, yeah, real fast, I was just going to say, I bought a brand new one of these about 6 months ago. They took the word Russia out of there to be politically correct.
Yeah, who publishes it? Is that from the World Apostle of Fatima?
I don't know. It's a little blue prayer book, and that's what I was wondering. Why was it taken out? And isn't it ironic, given today, that they took it out, you know?
Yeah. Don, thanks. I don't know, doctor, if you can answer that or not. I know the Blue Army has done a lot of good stuff there to get prayer going for Russia, but... Your final thoughts, if you have any.
Yeah. So I can't comment on that. But look, part of the original failed consecrations to Russia were because Russia wasn't named, right? And we believe that John Paul II was successful because Lucia said that it was. But you have to call these things by their names. You've got to be willing to stand for what the truth is.
Hey, doctor, thank you. I wish we had 3 hours to talk. It's always good to hang out with you. I appreciate your passion and your clarity on these issues. I know we'll catch up again soon. So have a great one, okay?
All right. Thanks,
thank you. That's Dr. Paul Kengor. We'll pray the rosary, or the chaplet, when I return.